Hello and welcome to this webinar on the Conceptual Framework. My name is Manuel Capsis and I'm joined today by Joan Brown. Both of us work on the Conceptual Framework project. The topic for this webinar is the elements of financial statements, definitions, and recognition. A few things before we start. You can download the slide pack by clicking on the Event Resources button on the left-hand side of your screen. Also, this webinar is not live, it is a recording, so we are not taking questions from the audience today. Finally, the views Joan and I will be expressing are our own and not necessarily those of the ISB or the I4S Foundation. Okay, so now Joan, the topic we are presenting today is just part of what is covered by the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft.
Yes, this webinar is the second in a series of nine that we're recording for people who are interested in the exposure draft of the proposed new conceptual framework. The first webinar is already available on the IASB website, and in that one, the chairman of the IASB, Hans Hogeborst, and the project leader, Rachel Nubley, give an overview of the project and the exposure draft as a whole. The remaining webinars will go into more detail on specific topics covered by the exposure draft. As you can see from the slide, the sequencing of the webinars doesn't follow the order of the chapters in the exposure draft, and that's because we're leaving topics from chapters 1, 2, and 3 to the end, because these chapters contain the least amount of new material. At the very end, we're going to add a webinar on the implications of the conceptual framework proposals for existing standards. We're often asked about this, and the webinar will explain both the general implications of the conceptual framework, what will change, importantly, what will not change. And it will also have a specific case study exploring how the proposed concepts for identifying, recognizing, and measuring liabilities could affect requirements for provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets if the IASB were to review the existing standard IAS 37. Today, we're starting with a look at the elements of financial statements, what these are, and when they're recognized in the statements of financial position and performance.
Okay, so what are the elements? Now, firstly, although what we see in financial statements are words and numbers, it's important to remember that those words and numbers are information about things in the real world. They're about things such as property, plants, and equipment, rights and obligations in contracts, employee service during the period, etc. The elements are the building blocks of financial statements, and we use the definitions of the elements to group and structure that information about those real-world things to give it meaning. Importantly, recognition of items that meet the definitions of the elements mean that the related amounts are included in the totals and the subtotals of the relevant statements, and those totals and subtotals are related to each other in a defined way. So information is provided in the statement of financial position about assets, liabilities, and equity, and information is provided in the statement of financial performance about income and expense. We will first discuss the definitions of assets and liabilities, and then discuss the definitions of equity, income, and expense, and we will finish with a discussion of recognition. Okay, so the definitions of assets and liabilities. The existing definitions of assets and liabilities have been useful for solving many issues in standard setting for many years. However, confusion sometimes arises because, firstly, the existing definitions refer to the flows of economic benefits. This reference blurs the distinction between the resource itself and the resulting flows of economic benefits. And secondly, some readers interpret the term expected as a probability threshold. To address these issues, the ED proposes to clarify that an asset is an existing economic resource and a liability is a present obligation, and not the future flows of economic benefits. To help distinguish between the resource and the future flows, the ED proposes a separate definition of an economic resource. This not only helps to reinforce that the asset is the existing resource, but the concept of the economic resource is also used in the definition of a liability. Another proposed change to the asset definition is the replacement of expected to with the term has the potential to. The purpose of this proposal is to make it clearer that there is no minimum probability threshold for future inflows for assets and future outflows for liabilities. The important thing is that the rights exist and the obligations exist, and that must be at least one circumstance in which the economic resource will generate economic benefits, or that the obligation will generate a future transfer of economic resources.
Manuel, I'm sometimes asked whether the revised definitions would mean more things being recognised as assets and liabilities in financial statements. Do you think that will be the case?
The ISB does not really have an objective of either increasing or decreasing the range of assets or liabilities recognised. The proposed changes to the definitions and the recognition criteria focus on identifying the types of information that are likely to provide useful information to the users of financial statements. So the ISB is also proposing changes to recognition, which we'll cover later in this webinar. Items that meet the definitions will be candidates for recognition, but that does not mean that all items that meet the definition will be recognized. Now, in addition to proposing changes to the definitions, the exposure draft is also proposing additional guidance on the definitions of assets and liabilities. Let's start by considering the guidance on the meaning of economic resource. The focus of the economic resource definition is the entity's existing rights. Rights may take various forms, and economic benefits might be produced by those rights in various ways. For example, you might have the right to use property, a right to sell inventory, or a right to receive cash. Some less obvious examples might include when an entity has the right to the services of its employees that it consumes immediately. So, for example, employee service that is paid by issuing equity in the entity. The service is a right momentarily, although it is consumed immediately. Another example that is helpful to distinguish between rights and the future flows of economic benefits is a purchased option. The option is the existing right and is an economic resource regardless of whether the option is exercised or not.
The exposure draft also has some guidance to support the liability definition, in particular to help apply the term present obligation. The ISB is developing this new guidance because it and the Interpretations Committee have had difficulty interpreting the term when developing standards and interpretations in recent years. In particular, they've had problems when a series of events must occur before an obligation becomes unconditional. And this question affects all sorts of transactions, including employee benefits subject to vesting conditions, variable lease payments, and some types of levy. And it's not clear at the moment which of the events is the one that creates a present obligation. The exposure draft is proposing that an entity has a present obligation to transfer an economic resource if two criteria are both met. First, the entity must have no practical ability to avoid the transfer. And secondly, the obligation must have arisen from past events. And the exposure draft includes some guidance on what that means. It says that the entity has the obligation has arisen from past events if the entity has received the economic benefits or conducted the activities that establish the extent of its obligation. And the exposure draft gives further guidance on the meaning of no practical ability to avoid. It says that an entity has no practical ability to avoid a transfer if, for example, the transfer is legally enforceable, or any action necessary to avoid the transfer would cause significant business disruption or would have economic consequences significantly more adverse than the transfer itself.
So, Joan, does that mean that liabilities don't have to be legally enforceable?
Yep, that's right. An entity could have a liability even if a transfer is not legally enforceable. Obligations can arise from an entity's customary practices or its published policies if the entity has no practical ability to change those practices or policies. And these are the types of liabilities that people often call constructive obligations. Another point to note is that an entity could have a liability even if the future transfer is conditional on a particular future action of the entity. In these cases, the entity will have a liability if it has no practical ability to avoid the future action that will trigger the requirement to transfer a resource. And then the important thing would be to identify when the entity has received the benefits or conducted the activities that establish the extent of its obligations. So, for example, an employer, the obligation could arise when it receives the employee services in exchange for which it may have to pay employee benefits, even if at that time the benefits are still subject to vesting conditions. These concepts raise a number of questions. So questions like, is the signing of an executory contract an activity that establishes the extent of an obligation? How would the new concepts apply to levies? And do the concepts imply a new way of looking at legal obligations to refurbish assets? These are all good questions, but they need more time, so we've scheduled a separate webinar for them. I've called the webinar A Closer Look at Liabilities and Executory Contracts, and it will be the next one recorded in our series.
Now, one area where the exposure draft is not proposing many changes is the definition of equity. The distinction between liabilities and equity has caused many problems, both conceptual and in applying existing requirements in practice. The ISB is exploring further how to make that distinction in its research project on financial instruments with characteristics of equity. One possible outcome of that research could be a recommendation to consider developing an amendment to the conceptual framework in relation to distinguishing between liabilities and equity. It's important to note, though, that in the exposure draft, the ISB is proposing some improvements to the definition of a liability. However, those proposals will still be needed, even if the ISB decides later to make further improvements to clarify or amend the distinction between liabilities and equity.
Manuel, why didn't the ISB wait until it's resolved the liabilities and equity problems before publishing the conceptual framework exposure draft?
Well, the ISB had hoped to address liability equity classification as part of this project. However, it believes that it needs more time to consider whether to propose changes in this area. Hence, the ISB decided to address liability equity classification in a separate research project rather than delay other much-needed improvements to the conceptual framework. This is consistent with its objective for the project to make worthwhile improvements within a reasonable time frame. Another area where the ED is not proposing many changes are the definitions of income and expense. The exposure draft is not reconsidering fundamentally the existing definitions. However, it is making consequential changes as a result of changes it's proposing to the definitions of assets and liabilities. Much of the discussion in the existing framework and the proposals in the ED relate to the presentation of income and expense. We will be having a webinar dedicated to the discussion of profit or loss and other comprehensive income at a later date. However, one of the things I should stress is that just because income and expenses are defined by reference to changes in assets and liabilities, this shouldn't be read to imply that the ISB regards the statement of financial position as more important than the statements of financial performance. The ISB thinks that to properly assess prospects for future cash flows, users need information about both the position of the reporting entity and its financial performance. The exposure draft emphasizes this point more clearly than the existing conceptual framework does. The way we have defined income and expense is based on changes in assets and liabilities. However, that does not mean that information about assets and liabilities is more important than information about financial performance. It is just that the ISB, and other standard setters for that matter, have found it more rigorous to define income and expenses as changes in assets and liabilities than to define income and expense first and then assets and liabilities as a result of income and expense.
Having defined the various elements of financial statements, the ISB's conceptual framework exposure draft goes on to discuss the circumstances in which items that meet the definitions of elements should be recognized in financial statements. Recognition of an asset or a liability means including it in relevant totals in the statement of financial position. And similarly, recognition of income or an expense means including that income or expense in the statement of financial performance. Recognition is not automatic. Some standards require items to be recognized only when specific additional criteria are met. Now, the ISB is proposing significant changes to its conceptual framework in this area, and to understand them, we need to consider first what the existing conceptual framework says about recognition. The existing conceptual framework says that items meeting the definition of an asset or a liability should be recognized if two other criteria are both met. First, it has to be probable that any future economic benefit associated with the asset or the liability will flow to or from the entity. And secondly, the asset or liability must have a cost or value that can be measured reliably. And the ISB thinks that these criteria need to be changed for two reasons. First, the probable inflows or outflows criterion is seen as inappropriate for some assets or liabilities. To my mind, it's more a rule of thumb than a concept. And if applied to liabilities taken on in exchange transactions, it leads to gains being recognized in some situations where no economic gain has actually arisen. Suppose, for example, that a bank is paid a fee to provide a financial guarantee. The probability of the guarantee being called upon might be low, but unless the bank recognizes a liability, it recognizes the full amount of the fee received as a gain as soon as it receives the fee, which is not really a faithful representation of the bank's obligations. Because the probable inflows or outflows criterion is not viewed as appropriate for some assets and liabilities, it's omitted from some standards, such as IFRS 9 financial instruments and IFRS 3 business combinations. When a concept is widely overwritten, I think that suggests that there's something a bit wrong with the concept. Another point is that the terminology used for the reliable measurement criterion is now a bit out of date. Since the conceptual framework was revised in 2010, reliability is no longer the term we use to describe the fundamental qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. The existing conceptual framework now refers to relevance and faithful representation. So, to overcome these problems, the exposure draft is proposing a different approach to recognition. The exposure draft is proposing a series of high-level concepts to replace the existing criteria. It's proposing, in particular, that failure to recognize assets and liabilities makes the financial statements less complete and can exclude useful information from them. But on the other hand, recognition of some assets and liabilities might not provide useful information. Or at least, it might not provide information that is sufficiently useful to justify the cost of providing it. So recognition requirements may need to vary between standards. And when the ISB is developing standards, it should consider three factors. First, whether a requirement to recognize a particular asset or liability would give users of financial statements relevant information about the asset or the liability, and of course about any resulting income, expenses, or changes in equity. Secondly, whether recognition would provide a faithful representation of the asset or liability and of any income or expenses or changes in equity. That might not be the case, for example, if there's a related liability or asset and that related liability or asset isn't recognized. And then finally, whether the benefits of recognition exceed the cost. The exposure draft goes on to discuss in some detail a variety of factors that might cause information to lack relevance, and it identifies three particular factors. First, if it is uncertain whether an asset exists or is separable from goodwill, or if a liability exists. Secondly, if an asset or liability exists, but there's only a low probability that an inflow or outflow of economic benefits will result. Or perhaps if all available measures of an asset or liability have so much measurement uncertainty that the resulting information has little relevance. These factors are often found together, and the exposure draft suggests that it will often be a combination of the factors rather than any one factor on its own that will cause information to lack relevance. But it also stresses that the presence of one or more of the factors doesn't necessarily cause information to lack relevance. For example, it notes that many measurements must be estimated and are subject to uncertainty, and the use of reasonable estimates is an essential part of the preparation of financial statements and doesn't necessarily undermine their usefulness. But there will be cases where the measurement uncertainty is just too high for the resulting information to be useful. And that might be the case, for example, if the range of possible outcomes is extremely wide and the likelihood of each outcome is exceptionally difficult to estimate. So these are all factors that the ISB would have to take into account when specifying recognition criteria in individual standards. We've come to the end of this webinar. Manuel and I hope you have found it useful and that you'll return to listen to the rest of the webinars in this series. The dates on which each of them is scheduled to be available are listed on the left side of the slide, but you don't have to listen to the webinars on these dates. They'll remain on the ISB website for you to listen to later. In the meantime, you can find further information about the project on the Conceptual Framework project page of the ISB website. And from that page, you'll also be able to submit comments on the exposure draft or register to receive email alerts about the project. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.